We begin with Steve Maviglio. He is from Forza Communications in Sacramento. And Steve, good morning to you.
Good morning. I think it's a beautiful day for California.
And I know you say that because it has something to do with the fact that there will not be, at least not in the immediate future, three separate Californias, correct?
Yeah. Yesterday, the Supreme Court, in a pretty rare decision, they haven't done this too often, has thrown Proposition 9 off the ballot before we even have a chance to vote on it because it was, in their view, illegal. They tried to do something by statute, which is by law, that's something that should has to first go through the legislature and be approved by a two-thirds majority.
Well, here's what's always been confusing to me, Steve, about a lot of propositions on the California ballot. It seems that they're, you know, they get on the ballot, they are voted upon, and then in several cases overturned because it turns out they are unconstitutional in some way or another. And my question is, how do they get on the ballot in the first place, aside from this one?
Well, in this day and age, what's happened to our initiative system, which is was designed in its very early days to get around the special interest in the legislature, it's been hijacked by billionaires who have ideas that they put on the ballot without any vetting, without any research, without any scrutiny by legal experts or the legislature. And something as wacky as this idea, Mr. Draper spent upwards of $6 million over the past couple of years. First, you remember, it might have been six Californias. This time it was three.
Yeah.
And put this on the ballot. And, you know, unfortunately, he didn't bother checking with lawyers who are specialists at this kind of thing. So that's why sometimes it makes it on the ballot and then gets ruled unconstitutional. And in this case, it was just so egregious that the court said, we shouldn't even deal with this on the ballot.
So it wasn't even close in terms of workability.
It was unanimous.
Why does this keep coming up? I mean, Steve, this idea of separating California, generally it's just into two states. But really, what is the motivation behind this?
Well, I think it's the basic motivation, and I think there's a lot to be said for it, is that people feel disconnected from their government because our state is so large. You know, our state senators have districts that are even larger than congressional districts, and there's a real disconnect. And you see it mostly from rural people who feel they have zero voice in the way our state is governed because they're largely outnumbered by urban populations.
I can kind of understand that, really, from a particularly Central California point of view. It must seem like they are already living in another state entirely. And as we're talking about California politics, also on tap, as far as the state goes, is a rent control measure. What's your take on that?
Well, I fully disclose I am actively working against that.
Oh, well, then I guess I know what your take on that is then. Why? Why are you against it?
Well, I'll tell you. I own a single family home that I rent out. And under this legislation, that would be included and regulated. And in my case, it's been something I bought, and that's my nest egg. And the fact that I'd have to go through a process of an unelected local board telling me, you know, whether I can upgrade my bathroom or not and increase the rent is just absurd to me. More importantly, though, in the bigger picture, is that every study that's been done on this just about has found that when you have rent control, there's less incentive to build more housing, which is what we need. And I don't think we can afford to slow down the construction of housing in the state when we need millions of new units just to keep pace.
Well, you're not going to get an argument from us here in the North Bay. We were pretty wiped out by the North Bay fires in terms of housing.
Right.
Still, what do you say to the people who say there is an overwhelming need for affordable housing? A lot of people wanting their kids to be able to, you know, exist in this state without having to leave it because they can't afford to live here. How do we accomplish that without any kind of rent control?
I'd agree with them 1,000%. We need more housing, and our campaign is actively working for something else that's on the ballot, an affordable housing bond that will provide lots of funds and lots of incentives to build that new affordable housing. But if you enact rent control, that's going to stop any new housing, and that's going to just drive up rents even more. And that's been proven time and time again. If you look at the cities that have it, rents are sky high, and it's really difficult to get an apartment because nobody leaves.
Yeah, although it seems like there is something of an exodus going on right now. Texas, for some reason, seems to be one of the places that Californians love to move to for some obvious reasons, and yet the thing is, once you leave California and go somewhere that's more reasonably, you know, reasonable, the cost of living is reasonable, you still have to live there, you know?
There is that, yeah.
You still have to live there. And it, in terms of California politics, Steve, you've got an interesting history in terms of national politics, too. You worked on the campaigns of Bill Clinton, Governor Michael Dukakis, Senator Gary Hart. That's a wide variety of candidates there.
Yeah, I spent most of my early years in New Hampshire, where politics is an industry,
yeah,
really. And so I had a lot of exposure to the grassroots campaign of some of those folks that ran for president way back when. And then I also, on the resume, I actually was a legislator myself for 6 years in New Hampshire, where you get $100 a year.
Well, the cost of living is pretty high in New Hampshire, too, so I don't know how you manage that. Certainly, obviously, not on that particular salary. What's the state of California politics as you see it?
Well, I think there's a lot of turmoil. I mean, clearly, there's a very strong anti-Trump streak. But we should have a governor's race that might be lopsided after going through the June primary, which is a very interesting experiment that we're still toying with in terms of who's going to be on the ballot in November. You have a legislature that has been held in check by Governor Brown for quite some time now in terms of their habits and terms of big spending, and we'll have to see if that changes in the future. But, you know, I think the legislative approval ratings are in the high 40s, which is pretty good, believe it or not, for a bunch of politicians. So we'll see. You know, it'll be a very interesting election year to see if this, quote, blue wave really is going to happen here. And all eyes in the country are on our competitive House seats, largely in the Central Valley and down south.
I fear, though, that California politicians, Democrats in particular, have not learned the lesson from 2016 that it's not enough to be against Trump. There must be more to it, too.
I agree. And I think, you know, I think Democrats in the state often overreach. And I think we're seeing that in a few places. We're seeing it with a lot of pushback on the gas tax, for example. And it is a very high cost of living kind of a place. And I think legislators need to remember that.
Absolutely. And the message has got to be loud and clear, it seems like, even in Democratic-friendly California. What do you see as the future for Dianne Feinstein?
I think she'll cruise to victory. As you might have read or heard on last weekend, the party bosses, sort of liberals of the party, endorsed Kevin DeLeon, the state Senate president, who is trailing, I think he got 12% in the June election and has less than $1 million in his bank account. And she, on the other hand, polled well over 40% in June and has a lot of money in the bank account. His problem is nobody knows who he is. She's probably vulnerable on the issue of her age. And there's definitely some restlessness among the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party. But hey, she's always been able to attract moderate votes, moderate Democrats, even Republicans, particularly in the Central Valley, she's always done very well with. I don't see her falling down. I think she stays on and wins and will serve as long as she can be effective.
So the progressive wave is not that high that it can supersede, you know, the durability and the tenure of Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the demographics of the state are changing. We're becoming younger, we're becoming less white, becoming less affluent. And those numbers are usually translating to more progressive candidates. But we really haven't seen that. If you look at the June turnout, it was not, the Latino turnout was well below its numbers.
Yeah, embarrassing.
So, you know, we'll see. I mean, people have to show up and vote if they want to make the difference. And still not translating into the kind of candidates we're seeing. I mean, the Democrats have a very diverse slate of candidates. If you go to the lieutenant governor and secretary of state and everything else, it's largely non-white candidates, which is a big change from the current. So we'll see if that keeps trending. It should, but you have to show up and vote.
Amen to that, and let's hope everybody heeds that particular call. Steve, a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for being here this morning.
You're welcome. Take care.
That's Steve Mobilio. He is with Forza Communications in Sacramento, talking California politics.